Cannon. Alex Soto. Cannon.
The cannon. The cannon. The cannon. The cannon.
That was my villain laugh. My villain laugh.
Cannon. Cannon. Cannon.
The cannon.
Wow, dude.
How about that?
Wow. Can you see me?
I can, man. That must.
Are you looking at me?
Yeah. That must be what it feels like to like hack a mainframe. You know.
Yeah, I feel like we just made simoleons in this. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that was awesome.
We hit the mother load and it's Rosebud in here.
Very rewarding.
Right here, I'm here with I'm gonna do this podcast show. I'm here with Asher Roth.
Let's get it.
Who's a fucking? I can't even front. This is someone who, in my experience, and just to be frank with you, like in my experience, growing up in this American culture, you were a big deal. And you remain a big deal. I actually caught up with your entire catalog since getting this assignment and revisiting a lot of your old classics. So before we get into, you know, more regular shit, I just wanted to give you props. So shout out to you.
Oh, man.
You're still out here. This new record really feels like a first record again for you in a way.
It does, man.
It's like a very strong statement.
Yeah.
And I'm just excited to be talking to you, man.
Dude, I appreciate you, Sam. Good morning to you as well, man. Yeah, it's the triple.
Please stand by. We are experiencing technical difficulties.
If you guys can hear me now.
We can hear you now.
All right, we're back.
You know what? It was my bad, fully. I'm pretty sure.
But anyway. I did hear like a little like doo-doo, but I mean, as long as we got, do we get that initial celebration recorded? Because that was important.
I don't think Craig stopped recording, so hopefully after this, Craig can have that archive for us.
Yeah. You know? I mean, this is all...
Did you hear what I said, though? Because I just poured my heart out.
I know,
you,
bro. I was, like, literally pouring my heart back, and then you were like, yo, I can't hear you, man. but it's...
Well, hopefully Craig got that, too.
Bro, this is communication in the 21st, right? I mean, like... Face to face is the ideal, but we got to work through a translator in Craig right now. It's just how it goes.
I mean, it's interesting how that's manifested on like such a scale that it's advised for our health to not see each other, you know, in general.
Yeah.
Just with the quarantine stuff, COVID, you know, goes without saying.
And I respect it, man. I do respect it. And I actually, in a way, think that it's opened up communication, obviously on a larger scale, and what the conversations that people are starting to have, the uncomfortable ones that people have tried to put to the side for hundreds of years. So like in a weird way, it's been beautiful for communication, but it's also like, you know, excuse me, but like you've probably had this before, and we have it as we grow up, of like, you know, being embarrassed in a conversation.
Oh my gosh.
From being in the room with somebody and saying something, or like, you know, and that body language and that feeling of embarrassment is actually what kind of helps you get your shit together and like, all right, I don't want to feel that again. So let me educate myself. But
for sure.
A little bit of both.
How do you feel like the internet has like been an outlet for anyone who's trying to escape, I guess, the consequence, maybe kids having grown up before it, like are doomed to, you know, in a way.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you have to go back to school, or like you're still in the neighborhood, so people see you around, like you're not staying at home. Like, I don't know. I think that's definitely something that's different about how kids are growing up now.
Yeah, it's tough, right? I mean, like I've was really into that conversation, and then like was looking for kind of like data and facts and like just to back it up, because theoretically it's like no duh, you know what I mean? Like riding our bikes around, skating around, and being with each other was like straight up how you formed social intelligence. And like same thing could be said about high school. Like I wasn't learning anything in high school, but I did learn how to like read people, and like learned about like the hierarchy of life, of like the people who are connected and come from this, they get to get to the lunch line first, et cetera, you know? But as far as like, there's also part of me that's like, yo, these kids are freaking brilliant, right? Like here we are.
Oh my God.
Setting up Discord, and it's like, oh, yo, what did we get? Like, I don't know.
Yo, look at us.
there's
this is embarrassing.
There's kids who are just straight wizards with it. And, you know, when it comes to that kind of another language of that, that is the internet. And, you know, personally for me, I know you and I spoke briefly off like, you know, hey, Ash, you've been doing it for a while, and like you've appreciate kind of the earlier work, and then we're taking kind of notice of how the recent work is almost a reintroduction or a first tape in a way, which you had mentioned, which I thought was so cool that you said that, because it is a first tape. And so for someone to hear that in there, listen to it, and not necessarily be connected through the entire journey, but you know, you see these kids on the internet and the way that they're reacting and behaving and communicating so fast. I mean, like, bro, I signed on TikTok for, you know, real life, 16 seconds maybe. And I was like, no way. My brain's just not even there. So these kids are on like a completely different frequency. And yeah. I respect it. I do. But it's just like, you know, I remember when I was going independent and really taking like that route of like, I'm going to do this on my own. And this must have been, you know, so Asleep in the Bread Aisle was 09. After that, I really didn't get much help. So when I was living in New York. Where you guys are in New York, yeah.
Yeah, we're in New York.
Yeah, so I was living in New York.
Where in New York were you?
I was in the Lower East Side in between, on 2nd Street between 1st and A. And so, like, okay. It was rad. I mean, Little Frankie's Pizza and just, like, East Village Radio was over there. And it was a groove, but it just wasn't home. And so, like, I had fun, but I was living kind of this, like, not my life, you know? So I have a lot of love for New York, and obviously there's family there, and my sister works with the charter school.
You grew up in Pennsylvania, right?
Yeah. So I'm actually back in Philadelphia right now.
Okay.
And so, you know, I did the runaround, but New York was such an interesting chapter for me because, again, it was one of those, like, social intelligence things where I didn't have the grind real life of New York. Like, if you grow up there and, like, really fighting the fight of, like, making something out of nothing and, you know, riding the subway and being an adult by the time you're 14, you know? But I did get to see, like, what the relationship with money and New York was, and behind that curtain of, you know, what money can do. And for me, it's interesting because it's the same thing with the music business. Like, the music business is so driven by money, power, stature, and not actually music. And so I learned kind of that underbelly stuff through not like the evils of New York, but just the reality of it, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, because if you think about like capitalism and any critique you may have of it or any like reality about it, like on the scale of like a farmer dealing their crop, you know, like that's magnified to like the umpteenth scale in New York. Cause like not only is New York, New York for the United States, it's New York for the whole planet.
Right.
You know, like New York has this mystique in our culture and in like the world. And that's like cause I did grow up here. So it's like, it is kind of shocking to like leave and like everyone knows where you're from or has some idea of where you're from. And,
can I ask you about like, so I don't want to get political on this podcast and obviously keep it fun and informative, but like, for instance, what was your, not necessarily stance, but just your observations of the mood of like kind of the mood of our generation? Like, we're talking about the kids who might not necessarily be involved, because it's like, even these kids, when I was a teenager or, you know, somebody who was just kind of self-absorbed, you're not even interested in politics, right? You're like, I don't care at all. And so now I've gotten to I guess this is going to be my, you know, we had Barack Obama. I think even George Bush, I was able to vote in that election. But like, what was the mood in New York? Because pandemic and protests, you guys were in the thick of it outside of like what's going on in the Pacific Northwest. So what was the mood? What was your mood in New York?
Well, New York has been definitely like very hot and like very involved. I think people who've been doing organizing work in the city have gotten a lot more attention that they deserve like through this time, because I think what's really interesting about this time in particular is that like the Bush era is still quite recent, you know, and I that's what I grew up in before Obama. Mm-hmm. And I do think that there was kind of a at least in my experience, a sort of disengagement almost from like the East Coast, maybe. I don't know if I'm broadening, like being too general,
right?
But of like people being like, oh, Obama's our president, like we can kind of lean back and like trust that like the general vibe is good or whatever, that people are okay, you know. I think there was a superficial calm that Trump kind of like broke for a lot of people here. And I think, I don't know, it's like, it's a really long history, you know, leading up to this moment.
Totally.
In time. And like, I definitely grew up like politically conscious and like going to like public schools in New York. Like, you notice certain kids like put into the accelerated program, mm-hmm. you know, or the gifted program versus, you know, kids who are kind of let fall by the wayside,
right.
you know, over time, just because like the government doesn't have time, the funding, like the people don't have the energy, the emotional bandwidth, ultimately
100%
kind of like take care of the community, you know. And I think that's something that like more than, and like as far as my generation, I have seen people, in my generation, but even younger, you know, taking on the work that has been deferred by generations past, you know, even on like in a, just like strictly on like an illegal and emotional level, because like a lot of these issues are just like, it's like, how do we settle this except for through the discourse in arriving at like, all right, this is the settlement, like this is the settlement that we agree upon, rather than like all right, now we take this, and then it's like a constant like, you know, crime on crime on crime, I guess, in a perceptive sense, you know, like not in like an actual sense, because everyone is righteous in their indignation.
It's true. Know? Like everybody's a little bit right? It's like
absolutely
kind of wild. And so like, it's so red and blue. It's funny that you said this, there's just so much that led up to right now. And I agree. And
I mean, even your music, dude, like I'm listening to your music and the wave that you're a part of. And like, I don't know, like I'm listening to it now as like a consumer in 2020, mm-hmm. considering who I was as a consumer in like 2010.
Right.
And like considering how that's fit into like my life story, mm-hmm. you know, just broadly as far as like what as like a person can expect mm-hmm. out of life type shit. And it's like, yo, you're talking like certain things that like, I guess not to like put you in a box, you know, but like certain things that like men can't talk about or shouldn't talk about in a certain way now are like, you know, the number one song is WAP, you know, by Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion.
Right.
And it's like, that's important because like you fit into that tradition too, in like a post gendered thing, which was interesting. Cause I was listening, there was a record that you had where someone maybe I'm thinking of a Talib Kweli record,
mm-hmm. but
either way, someone's talking about like this post-racial thing, which was like an idea that I think people had in the Obama era.
Oh, no, that was
almost real.
Yeah, that was almost real. That was on Greenhouse Effect Volume 2. That Kweli and Travis Barker and Blue
on the Sour Patch
Kids. Yeah, on the Sour Patch Kids remix, and he was like, you know, this is the post-racial society, but like, you know, not for nothing. That was a lot of the conversation around me in hip hop too. You know, when I was sitting with Q-Tip, he thought it was so interesting because he's like, okay, here's a white kid. Cause he got to know me based off of like some of these, you know, acapellas and stuff that I was rapping in New York, at like sort of open mics. And so he heard me do something like, it was like the Just Listen stuff about, you know, basically equality. And he was like, there's never been a white dude that just was allowed to speak the truth. He was basically saying white kids in rap music essentially always have to wear the clown mask. And here we are in, you know, outside of the Beasties. And it was funny recently watching the Beastie Boys documentary that Spike Jonze did. It was kind of more so of like theater. And I hadn't, you know, cause I wasn't even born yet, but like, seeing what they went through as white kids in rap music and just trying to emulate Run DMC and then more so finding their voice in, you know, bringing in the punk and rock influences and all that jazz. But yeah, man, I was the conversation around me at 2009, 2010 was this unapologetically white kid in rap music. And as much as like the Eminem comparisons and things were there and, you know, comparisons elsewhere, there still wasn't this like level of whiteness that had been achieved in portrayed in rap music. So,
and I think that's what I love about like the Greenhouse Effect tapes and Seared Quince.
Yeah, you got
it. Is it Seared? Yeah. Did I get it right?
Seared Foie Gras.
Seared Foie Gras. I always fuck up the order, but
everybody does.
Those records are you. Yeah, those records are you rapping your ass off.
Oh man,
you know, over like classic beats.
Oh man.
And just kind of like being unapologetic about who you are and how you do fit into like hip hop.
It's tough, man. I mean, I wish I could always do that. I wish I could always, you know, because self-awareness and all of that stuff is actually a tool and a way for people, not just in music and in rap, but like self-awareness is a way that you can navigate the world. And like,
for sure,
that attitude that I had in Cire de Foie Gras and Greenhouse Effect and even Greenhouse Effect Volume 2 for a certain extent, it kind of, part of it gets sucked out of more of the album driven, LP driven stuff like Asleep in the Bread Aisle, Retro Hash, and Flowers on the Weekend are so conscious of songs, you know, conscious of writing songs. Where actually,
yeah, I was gonna say that, yeah.
Yeah, whereas my strength is literally just like blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean? Like, this is what's going on. And so, you know, I'm not a classically trained musician or anything like that. So I have serious imposter syndrome when it comes to, you know, going into the music industry as far as the peers and the people that I respect and love.
Sure,
not so much the business of music and the people who do like record deals and publishing deals. Right. It's like, yeah, cool. I almost speak their language more than I do the musician's language. And but being kind of a tweener, so to speak, it's like, as I move forward, I really want to help more musicians tell their stories, because the musicians that I'm very close friends with, they don't have a similar level of social intelligence or self-awareness. They just want to make fucking music, you know?
Hell yeah.
And, you know, the business has kind of preyed off of that. But, you know, we've kind of talked about a bunch of different things. But yeah, man, I mean, like, I've always cared. I've always, like, not cared, but, like, kind of given a shit. And, like, on the first, I mean, even Greenhouse Effect Volume 1 has, like, Waiting on the World to Change and different kind of, like,
I mean, Just Listen is on that.
There you go. Yeah. And then like
The Sun God Free.
The Sun God Free, bro.
Those two tracks, like back to back, I felt affirmed. Because I think something that like was, at least for me growing up, really inspiring about like your wave. I think Kid Cudi, like B.O.B., kind of this group that was very emphatic about people knowing things. You
for
know?
Sure.
Like, that was the currency. It was like, I really want people to know that I know things and that like it's important for you to know things in order to navigate this world.
Yeah, and it's like cool to know things too, you know?
Exactly. I think that especially rap being this genre that's so motivated by like righteousness and like kind of about like leading by example, you know, and being the MC, the master of the ceremony.
Yeah.
I found that to be really you know, it guided the path a bit, you know, I'd say.
Knowledge of self for sure. And it's like, it was funny because Pitchfork just roasted me again just because they...
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, that's just a hit piece, in my opinion. But, like, they roasted me for giving a shit. You know what I'm saying? I was like...
Kind of, yeah.
I was like, yo, this is, you're not even talking about the music at all. You're just roasting me for, like, having some a little bit of awareness of what's going on, pretending and acting like I've never done that before because I Love College accidentally went double platinum, you know?
Yeah, pretty much. I think that that's... you could tell reading certain reviews whether or not the person reading it actually even knows the artist.
Yeah, my buddy Rich called me and it was really cool. He's who helped me with Retro Hash. And like, you know, I don't really typically care for reviews and comments and stuff like that. I'm actually pretty good with the thick skin. And so I sat with that for a second and it didn't really hurt because there was no genuine truth. It was such an opinion. But my buddy Rich hit me and was like, yo, dude, what I thought was so cool about reading that was like people still have no idea how to define you. And I was like, damn, that's kind of ill. I mean, so pros and cons to that.
For sure. I think what people are used to now in their artists is like this diary kind of thing where it's like on site, you listen to the record and it's like more or less what you expect. But I think with what you did with this record and what I hope you continue to is like, you have a lot more exploring to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're an artist that anyone who like listens to this record, they're going to have some idea of you, but you do have an opportunity to be like, well, I mean, I'm really on some other shit. And like, I went into that with confidence because though you may say like you're, strength is kind of just rapping, you know, to your wit's end on like some of those mixtape tracks. Like I had to, I noted and have to commend that, like, you do approach these album records, like, this idea of, like, for sale as, like, something that you have to consider differently and, like, build songs with more consideration for a more classical idea of what music is, you know, rather than, like, hip hop, which is like, I know, like, still has like a weird place culturally as far as like whether or not it's considered to be music. I personally think that, you know, Young Thug, any of these rappers today who are working on like innovating on the form, like that's as much music as just the instrumentation or like the structural things that I think you're hitting really well. But yeah, I just got to say that, like, because of how that first this record sounded, like, I'm very excited to see what you're doing next, you know, and I think you can go into it with confidence because, like, you've definitely, I like you, like, this album felt like a bit of a, like, fuck your expectations kind of moment.
It's funny. I mean, one, I appreciate that because those were some intentions that I put into this. It was just like, you know, my buddy Josh Bloom called me too. Like, I typically kind of re-up on some of these relationships that I don't see first face to face. And that's another beautiful thing about music. It's like, I might not see Josh all the time, but he'll listen to the album and he kind of knows where I'm at with it, right? And so, yeah, Josh calls me and he was like, yeah, you're clearly doing your own thing, you know? And it's true. And with this record, you know, I wanted to set myself up to do it for another 20 years, you know?
Yeah. And I see that you hooked up with someone who you haven't really put out, like, any records
yeah,
with.
Yeah, Rob.
As well.
Rob,
and like, I think he did a great job with the production.
Yeah, he got it, man.
I would like to hear some about like that story because it sounds like you went back to Pennsylvania, right?
Yeah, stop me when this becomes long-winded, you know what I mean? It's just funny, man. Like, you know, objectively, I think that like the Asher Roth story is actually an interesting story that because of the entry level and because of the connotation, nobody really wants to tell, you know? And so when I talk about it with people just one-on-one, they're like, dude, what the fuck, dude? Like, what a story. And just, you know, again, the Asleep in the Bread Aisle and that time, 2009, 2010, 2011, like that run, Greenhouse Effect to Seared Foie Gras, I mean, was, you know, for people like us, we were all growing up together through that. And so now becoming an adult, and like your, or so to speak, you know, but a young adult where your priorities do change and where you put your time and your energy. You know, my sister had a child, and that was the catalyst for me to move home because I was on the other side of the country in Los Angeles, not really fully committed and not necessarily committed, but I wasn't like in a groove. And so there was nothing necessarily keeping me there. We had done the Retro Hash record, which again, like I remember XXL or somebody writing up and being like, nobody's interested in your transformation or your like, you know what I mean? And so it was, you'll notice that on Seared Foie Gras, like chronologically, Seared Foie Gras was my fuck all y'all. I mean, there's even a joint on there that I don't necessarily love, but with B.O.B. that was about fuck the money. And I was,
oh, I love that.
I was very aware that, like, you know, people are on your team if you're doing certain things, you know? And so, like, there's certain tricks that you got to bust out, you know, have a famous girlfriend, you know, write songs that are, you know, you got to be kind of controversial in a way and all this stuff, you know? And so when I realized, I was like, look, I'm not going to wear the clown mask. Like, I'm going to grow. I'm going to be a person. I'm going to be a human. And music is going to be something that, you know, I use and not necessarily uses me. And so I came home and I always wanted to make a record in Philadelphia and just and at home in general. I don't know why, you know, call it kind of a pride thing or whatever, but my sister's, my niece is basically what brought me back. And just through kind of the motions of being in Philly, in the city, I met up with a kid, CJ, who actually was in the same school district as me. He didn't actually go to Pensbury High School, but he went to the tech school. But Tech and Pensbury were right down the street from each other. So a lot of the kids in that high school hung out with kids that went to Tech, and a lot of Tech kids hung out with the kids that went to Pensbury. And so we just got along having come from the same area. And it's funny because he he had admitted to me, he was like, bro, like when I was younger, like, cause he's a little bit younger than me, like maybe three years. And he was like, when I was listening to you, Sun God Free was the joint that I heard that was like, all right, I'm not supposed to rap. Like, cause he was rapping over that with his boy Tay. And when he heard Sun God Free, he was rapping over that same beat and was like, you know what? He bodied it. But we were connected in some way. So when we linked, you know, they have a little shed out in Fairless Hills where it's mainly Rob Deckhart, who's the producer and multi-instrumentalist, and then CJ and Tay. They make up this group called Best Friends. They're kind of doing their thing, and we were writing together a bunch. So the cool thing about my relationship with Rob is that I had come in just hanging out with those guys and like working, and we were doing writing sessions. And there's actually the song that we wrote called Get Out, about leaving the city and all of that jazz, that actually might come out, but some of those writing sessions. But you know, Rob and I just started to, you know, speak the same language. And again, Rob loves to do his own thing, you know, he's not out socializing, he's a music guy and all of its worth. So it's like, if you speak to him, he's gonna tell you who played the trumpets on, you know, this Prince record, you know what I mean? Like he's got it all figured out. So when it came time for me to make another full length, I remember walking down the street, I was going to the bank, and I was like, I really feel like Rob can handle the bulk of this. And so I still had like thoughts of like bringing Chuck in and like, and bringing some of the homies who I just, you know, love and adore. But then I was like, you know, let's work with Rob on the bulk of it. And man, no lie, bro, we probably recorded just in a batch like 17 songs, and I think 12 of them are on the album. So it's not like we did like 500 joints and had to cut it down. But it's so cohesive because it was created in a specific amount of time with just one homie, and then we brought in some of the horn friends. I mean, for those who don't know, but should know, Philadelphia is just loaded with talent, specifically in the music world. We've got like culinary killers and we've got, you know, music killers. And so it wasn't too hard to find cats to come in and help us with instruments and like some of the horn sections and different things. But Rob is a beast. He's going to be somebody who does it for the rest of his life as well. So I hope people check in with him as on the same front. I mean, I can keep going, bro. Like, what do you, you know? Please. Yeah.
No, go for it.
I was just going to say, it's like, yeah, the opening record of Flowers on the Weekend, we're talking about Flowers on the Weekend, is a joint, Things Change. And like on Things Change, I'm, you know, basically setting up exactly what you're talking about like, we're going to do this however it feels right for the next 100 years, you know. There's nothing else guiding this except for intuition and like intention. So like also having fun with it. I remember when Way More Fun, we recorded Way More Fun, by the way. I mean, Yachty bodied me on that. And like for me, my position is, yeah, let me set up thematically what this joint is about. But Yachty totally like in a weird way put me on to how talented these quote-unquote, they call them mumble rappers, but what they're doing like technically and rhythmically, and then also from a tonality standpoint, like these kids, these young thugs of the world, they're unbelievable. They're unbelievable. Their understanding of music, and it's just something that people should absolutely admire before it's too late, because they're really, really good. You know, with that being said, it's just wanted to put a full scale record together, and it came down to, hey, there's a pandemic, you know what I mean, like let's release it and not wait and not try to find a record label for it or go through all of these other things that kind of just stop the music from coming out.
Sure. When did you complete this record?
So it is August of 2020. The album came out in April. So the mixing process and all that jazz was its own beast. So we probably finished a bulk of the recording in 2019. And then I would say we started mixing it, January, February of 2020. So 2019 was a lot of the recordings, which was cool because you know, they held up, you know, when we heard them in a kind of a time that like things were starting, the seams were starting to come undone. The music was still like, you know, Still Got Some was just kind of about being like, again, disenchanted and disengaged with everything that's going on, but still trying to, still finding it, something inside of you to like really care. I remember that was opening up like Love Baby, Tough to Love Lately. And that wasn't even before this, that was before things were starting to really come about. So
the fatigue was already a part of the content, you know?
Man, I mean, it's just been such a trip. And like, I'm very fortunate for you in regards to as being a storyteller and somebody who's just interested in life in general to come across, hey, this Asher Roth kid, man, like, what was going on there? And to have been, you know, brought in from a Greenhouse Effect Volume 1 level and then see where we're at with Flowers on the Weekend and be excited about where this is going. Because I've always wanted to position myself as like, if you already know what you're getting when you click on an Asher Roth song, like I screwed up.
I'm glad you have that outlook, because I mean, it's what keeps it fresh, man, because like every project does have its own flavor.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, though, as far as, because you said you had 17 tracks, like did you build this project like sequentially, or you guys worked on songs like how many per session? Like,
yeah, it's tough.
Like, how did you land on 12? You know, if it really, because I find when you work with like a super tight crew, it's also easier to like collectively be like, all right, we agree on this. It's easier to agree, I guess, just because like everyone's there for the whole duration of the like writing, producing, you know, mixing process.
And again, we were lucky because it's just Rob and I. And so when it was just us, we really just had to agree. I mean, Rob's a little bit more of I'm an R&B guy, don't get me wrong. I'm a real R&B guy, but he loves his R&B. And that's actually probably what brought us together. So
You have like plenty of R&B like ventures.
Oh, there's,
I think, in your catalog too, man.
I'm definitely an R&B head, like, but you know, he there was a couple of joints that I had to talk him off, like, this just doesn't fit on this record. And so like,
sure.
I played Chuck this joint called Cosign. That's just, again, writing about when a relationship doesn't work out, will you still like, you know, have my back rather than go through the streets and just talk a bunch of trash about me, you know what I mean? Which relationships can do. And, you know, I remember playing that for Chuck, and he's like, oh, this is it, bro. Like, this is your joint. You need to send this to Solection right now, blah, blah. But, you know, that didn't even make it on the record. But, yeah,
Why didn't you put that on the
just
record?
It's just too R&B, like Timberlake-y wannabe. It just wasn't it, you know?
Hey, man.
You know, but...
But you did it, though. You got to let yourself have that moment.
Well, man, because, you know, I'm still really interested in writing for other people, man. I have these joints that I feel like, look, here's the lyrics and the vibe, and it's dope, but, like, if somebody else sung it, it would be crazy. And so... I still just kind of have like, you know, I have a little folder in my Dropbox that's like for somebody else. And we'll.
That's for good. I've honestly found like so much of the work that people like are too afraid to go into on their own is like some of their best work. Like, even if you look at like Tyler, what happened with Tyler in the past few years, like Igor apparently was a record that, like, a lot of that content, just to start with, like, Earthquake, for example, he wrote it for other people, or he tried to get other people to do that song, but nobody would take it. He had to do it himself, you know, and that's a big moment.
And there you go. Yeah, it's true, man. I mean, just finding those sweet spots and timing and just trying my best to just not be too close to the music. Like, to your point, just let it be what it is.
Because, like, how much of it is, like, about, like, a broader thing, like an industry thing versus like you and your fans?
Yeah, a lot of it. I mean, again, like, it's funny in music and in art in general, you meet a lot of like tortured souls, you know, people that are just like going through it. And, you know, I'm actually, my buddy, I went on a autobiography kick just because I needed some light reading. Like, I was getting way too heavy into like mythology and like philosophy and all this jazz. And so I needed some light reading. So my buddy brought me over Anthony Bourdain's Kitchen Confidential. And so I've been reading that, and I'm fresh off of like the Andre Agassi autobiography. I read The Rock's autobiography from a while ago. But the Anthony Bourdain stuff's interesting because he talks about like cooks and like this the people that the culinary attracts, and it's kind of these like pirate types, you know, these people who have kind of gone through some stuff. And in the same respect, some of like our most revered artists are miserable and completely tortured. And luckily for me, man, like I come from a family and my parents are still together. Like I've had a relatively like stable upbringing. And so I've had to find my art more so through observation than through confession, you know? And so that might not always be avant-garde, or it might not always be cutting edge, but it's honest. And so, yeah, finding, using this record to really take a role as an observer and a commentator, not just on the outside world, but also how I'm feeling, rather than, you know, entering these dark dimensions that like border on schizophrenia, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I do think that's something that I think the ambition of an artist kind of, I don't know, is suggested to be demanded, but it's not necessary. I don't think that's just the romantic notion.
Exactly. It's true. I mean, and, you know, we get that projected onto us. And like, again, that kind of imposter syndrome that I like to believe is a little bit more, it's more popular than led to believe. You know, I think that a lot of people feel like they're not any good at what they do, even though they're doing it. And yeah, man, I just feel like it's asked of us to go in. And I think that's a really hard thing to do. It's genuine work to really go in. I think we spend a lot of, if not all of our time, distracting ourselves.
I hear that.
So it's tricky, man. And then again,
how do you go ahead.
I was going to say, and then using rap music where you were saying the same thing, like, it's like, there's this whole conversation about, is this even legitimate? And then you're a white kid in that. And you're like, am I even legit? Like, what am I doing with my life? You know? So it's all, it gets a little complicated. And then you get older. Sure. Whereas like when we're 22, 23, it's like, it doesn't even matter. And then you're old. And then like, not, you know, you're older and you're just like, you know, talking about security and safety. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't have the same thoughts.
No.
You know, you don't get the same kind of attention.
Yeah. You have thoughts. You actually have genuine thoughts, you know, and like you start thinking about like, you know, other people come into your life and you're responsible, you know, in a certain degree for them as well. And, you know, it's not meant to be complicated because it's like this weird thing that it's extremely complicated and complex, but at the same time, it's not at all, you know? So it's strange. I mean, still to this day, I don't know if I classify myself as an artist or a rapper. I mean, it's still hard for me to put that as my title,
well,
you know?
Well, is there a difference, you know? Because like with writers, it just like, there is more of a conflation maybe.
Right.
I honestly like listening to all these records and just thinking about my experience as a hip hop fan, I guess, like, I've seen so many different styles come and go. Mm-hmm. And I think about how like painting is kind of classified and historiographed, and like there've been movements, you know, I don't know what we would call like what you were a part of or what you continue to be a part of. But I do think it's important to kind of allow yourself to be elevated to that stature, I guess. And also kind of denigrated, because, you know, artists are nasty people, you know, in their own right.
Woo. Man,
and human beings, man, human beings.
Seriously, such a competitive world. I mean, like, but like, it, just because you write a book, are you a writer? I don't know. I mean, yes, but you know, when you get into that world, it's like, no, you're not. You're not. You like, you start comparing.
How does a writer carry themselves? You know, constantly, consistently.
Yeah, I mean,
how do they do?
I guess they just write all the time. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
Again,
does a rapper rap all the time?
Exactly, bro. I mean, that's another thing that lends itself to me as a. If I'm being honest about how I go about my day and stuff, I'm not obsessed with making rap music or making music in general. It's very fluid in regard. It's almost seasonal for me. Like, I don't spend all my time, you know, or, you know, 8 hours a day, 10 hours a day in a studio, which is like almost what is promoted, like, you know, no sleep, you know, grind all the time.
It really is.
And it pays off. And like, I think that there's some truth to that as well. But like, there's other elements of myself as just like this whole full spectrum of a human being that I'd like to work with. And I remember that kind of early speech, the early speech that they kind of give you in your initiation to the music business is like, do all of this now, do all of this now so you can retire when you're 35. But I always think about,
I was kind of wondering about that, because you were in, I think you were in a position to like make like so much money, you know. I don't know what you're, I don't even want to pry necessarily, but I think through the rest of your catalog, there is like a heavy, I guess, conversation around like choices that you made that didn't make you a lot of money, but like for your soul, you know, dude, in a way.
I mean,
and like for your mentality, for your brain.
Yeah.
And like, as far as this like kind of like band of outsiders thing goes, like that's kind of the vibe you have on a lot of these mixtapes that are feature a lot of people, you know, like the Paps and Jazz record with that you made with Blendin' Babies, mm-hmm. you know, who I don't really know much about outside of like the work you did with them that and Chuck did with them. It's like there is a huge like camaraderie
mm-hmm.
That I feel like you chose maybe over like certain pop decisions you could have made, or even business deals you could have made, you know, with certain people.
Yeah. I mean, 100%, man.
That's your story to tell.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, you know, I think you nailed it. It's like, it's hard to get into the soul side of things. And I know that like but like, it's a mentality thing for sure. Like, you know, I think that there's a lot of dueling forces and pros and cons to everything. And obviously financial security and financial freedom frees up a lot of stuff. But like, if I was retiring from creativity at 35 to go like live in Greece or and play dominoes and smoke cigars, I mean, I just feel like you beat the game way too early. Like, you know, so I don't know, just kind of positioning myself to have those rewards that are a little bit more communal. There's kind of some shared experiences in the whole thing, which I thoroughly enjoy a good shared experience. Like, wow, dude, like you saw that too. That was great.
Hell yeah.
And so I went that route. And unfortunately, man, like our art form, for better or for worse, is validated by outside influences through these numbers. And those numbers can be so easily manipulated. You know, people know to a certain extent about algorithms. And if you're part of that ecosystem, or if somebody's, you know, somebody else is getting paid off of what you're doing, you're going to see an increase in all of that. And so I've probably been fairly stubborn to an extent to just go straight up dolo, like all by myself into this thing. Not saying from the collaborations that I do with my producers and my artist friends and everything like that, but from a business standpoint, I just wanted to know who I was really speaking to, instead of like having, you know, 900,000 views week one on a video and like not really understanding that like 750,000 of those might just be people that got there for, they're not even fans of your stuff. And so
Yeah. That
was always really important to me, for better or for worse. But yeah, man, I mean, like I'm still ambitious. I still want to do things on a level that is perceived as competitive. And like, I still want people to understand that like the work that we're doing is professional and really good. But when you're not doing those quote unquote numbers, unfortunately, the business that I'm in just doesn't really pay attention. So you have to kind of like not really worry about that.
Have you, so you say that now you don't really work in a way that is like you in the studio for that, you know, like 10 hours a day, mm-hmm. or like even consecutively. Was there a part of your career, like from that Asleep in the Bread Aisle run until even Retrohash, where you were working that hard? Or
yeah, I mean, like there was just kind of like going to the studio, the studio should be a place that's like safe, you know? And I remember kind of having to go to the studio specifically. They were trying to get me to record that song that Sammy Adams ended up performing called like Sunset Boulevard. That was like written by Ryan Tedder and was apparently like this no-brainer smash record. And it just, again, it just was work, like trying to like put something on that record. And instead, I used the studio time to end up recording The World Is Never Enough, which was a Charles Bradley flip that was about like the Ukrainian revolution. And so, okay. like, that pretty much sums up. That's like a microcosm from my relationship with the...
That kind of, like, commissioned work versus, like, that conscious
bro, work. Bro, and it's like, again, like, you ever watch What We Do in the Shadows, by any chance? You know Colin Robinson, the energy vampire? Yes. It's yeah. like that, man. Like, when you're doing work with people that you don't really love, like, you just end up so tired, you know, and you're just drained. But when you're doing work with people that, like, invigorate you, and it might not, again, it might not chart, and it might not make you the money that you need for the rest of your life, but it's just so fulfilling, and it makes you feel energized and excited, and, like, I value those things. And it would have been silly for me at... I'm fortunate, because I actually... didn't sign the best recording contract ever. I mean, we all have those horror stories. But I'm fortunate enough to not have gone down the road too far, put myself in a situation where I wasn't able to kind of like unplug and reconnect the wires in a different way and choose those shared experiences and energizing work over like the draining. But at least you don't have to worry about money. It's tough though. Like yeah. some people, I mean, look, there's again, everybody's a little bit right.
Like, cause even down to like the making of your product, like it'll, you don't have to do as much work to make it anymore in that situation. Right.
It's true.
Like you're getting paid more, but like they're giving you Sunset Boulevard to record over, you know?
Bro, it's so bizarre, right? Like, could you imagine perform? I mean, super shouts to like, again, this is not, I'm not trying to like, say there's a right but
as
or
far
wrong.
As the like as far as like living in a world where like what you see is what you actually get, you know, which is like but, I think important to you, you know,
for sure. And again, like I just couldn't imagine singing a song that I didn't write for the rest of my life. Like it means nothing to you other than just a business move. Yeah. It just sounds kind of like, again, like this like Greek mythological punishment that like, all right, we'll give you the silver and the gold, but you have this, you have to sing these empty words for the next 25 years.
Right. And now in contrast, right? Are you signed to any major label now?
No, man, I haven't.
You're not beholden to any like Q1 to Q4, like multi-year, you know, plan or anything, man, to make some bread.
No manager, no publicist, like. And it, you know,
you can just put out music whenever you want.
I can just put out music whenever I want. But keep in mind, bro, like we still have to keep the lights on, right? So there needs to be mm-hmm. some level of, I don't want to say compromise, but I guess that's the word. But you do need some sort of structure if you're going to be in the business of music. Now, if I'm just going to release music just for the heck of it, like, and not be competitive about it and just doing it for my health, it's like, I'm good. I've set that up. I've set this foundation up of like, let's distribute this music. I'll put it out. We can create it for a couple $1,000s via mixing and a couple videos, support it through that and keep it moving. But, you know, at the same time, it's like, I don't own a home, you know, I still pay rent, you know, I got rid of my car, which is great. But the point being is like, I still have bills that I need to pay, and you're not going to do that off Spotify money. That's just the truth. So, you know, the music business, in my opinion, is changing completely right now, given the pandemic and the digital experience, so to speak. Like, are people going, would you pay $2 to watch a concert that's streamed, or would that not really interest you? How many times would you do that, you know, as a consumer? Like, where are you at? If you can't go to the show for another 2 years, like, are you going to pay... you know, I forget who you used as an example previously, but would you give them $15 to watch them stream their show?
Well, it's interesting because like now, for example, like that sounds strangely unappealing, but like apparently there is a market for something like OnlyFans, right? Or a market for like different types of sale, you know, different types of work. Mm-hmm. So it's like really is, I don't know, our talents on some level are chosen, but I think there are many more that we're given that like needfully we're bound to discover, I guess, in the future.
Yeah, I mean,
just like as you said, to keep the lights on, man. Yeah, it's really weird to have to prove your worth, you know, to the rest of us, you know, to everyone, man, you know.
Come on, you nailed it. And then like at the same respects of like the value of or not the value of, but like needing a dollar. I mean, people are literally streaming themselves eating for 15 hours a day. And people, you know, don't get me wrong, they're getting paid. But like, again, I'm not, as somebody who's has a little bit of, you know, old school in me for what old school is considered to me, but like, I'm not prepared to stream myself and let people into my world for 8-9 hours a day of like, this is what I'm doing. This is my morning routine. You know?
I mean, that goes back to what we were saying about like, you know, I was struggling so hard to like get this recording going. Like in my fantasy or my imagination of what this like next generation is, not saying I'm like, not to age myself too much, but like, I've thought like, damn, like the future of entertainment, the future of, as we've already seen, is this live streaming thing.
100%.
Where like every moment is on record, you know, every moment is recorded.
Dude.
You know, so it's like so much of the things that are used against us as far as like guilt and shame and like, I have this tape of you doing this, you know, that kind of thing. It's like for the birds, you know, more or less at this point, because like I could just run it back. Yeah, we got instant replay on life.
So. We got it's instant replay on life, you know, and like there's part of me, man, that's just like, I'm not going. You know what I mean? I'm not going. It's just,
I feel that. Yeah, I feel that.
It's the same thing with Mars. Everyone's like, yeah, man, we're out of here. We're going to Mars. It's like, motherfucker, Earth is amazing. Like, why are you guys all ditching everything? You know, like, and it's just nobody wants to kind of like just fix the old. But yeah, dude, I'm a little bit nervous about where the kind of entertainment industry is going. And so, you know, that's why I've just kind of set myself up to do it at my pace with the people I like to do it with. And then I can make decisions as I go rather than the industry making the decision for me.
Yeah. Cause I think, at a certain point, if you're making like industry decisions, it's like you're making a decision for like a collective you don't even
come on, bro.
Know.
Come on, man.
Whereas, like, if you what you've done is kind of chosen to be like, all right, there are people around me, and I'm actually focusing on keeping them around.
Man, it's true though, man. Like, you know, our relationships as we get older. I've talked about this before, but and I'm sure you know this. Like, that's really all we got, man. Especially when something like this happens. You realize, you're like, damn, I love my friends. Like, dang, what's up, mom? Like, I missed you. I haven't talked to you in a while. Like, that type of stuff is very valuable. And, you know, entertainment in general, it's not necessarily music, but, like, entertainment is so self-absorbing. You kind of, like, start feeling like you're important. You know what I mean? You start feeling like what you do matters. And all of that stuff can be, you know, really polluting. So, you know, in a way, I'm definitely an eternal optimist, but like, I do think right now there's been a lot of good to come out of just like taking a time out and, you know, hold up 1 second. And when we got into this kind of like light speed, again, we're talking about these kids being in new frequencies, like higher frequencies.
Mm-hmm.
You tend to just keep going. Like, don't look back. Keep going. No, don't worry about that. Keep going. Keep going. Keep going. Keep going. Keep going. Keep going. And I think we finally got to a place where it's just like, all right, hold on. Like, can I take a second to breathe? And
yeah,
there's so much positive in just hanging out for a second. And now we're looking at everything. We're like, defund the fucking police, man. Like, what's this over here? Get rid of that. We don't need that. And it's just a matter of whether we're really going to do the work and kind of fix something that's broken, or if we're just going to plow ahead and just keep it moving.
Yeah. And then throw on Grind by Asher.
Right, bro. They weren't ready, though, man. They weren't ready.
They were not ready. Dude. That was a smash, bro. Dude. That song is a smash.
They weren't ready. I mean,
they weren't ready.
I was like, again, that's what bothered me about that write-up was like, oh, those wokeness shit. I was like, fam, we've been talking about social inequality since 2010. Like, we've been talking about, you know, the wealth inequality gap for a decade. Nobody,
I bet that person, like, they just watched I Love College maybe and then called it a day.
Yeah, you know, but like
research,
but this is what I mean about telling the story. Like, I'm here for is just to have these conversations. Like, this is like all I want to do is have these conversations, and like, not, it's not about being right or wrong, but just having productive fun and like being productive with our time. And for someone to just like disregard all that we do for the sake of like clicks, not for nothing, you know what I mean? Just like, people want to see a good old witch burn at the stake, you know? It's like, and it just it doesn't help the part of actually having healthy
discourse on what's going on. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Like, what if the assignment wasn't like review Asher Ross album? It was like learn how to love Asher Ross album, however hard it is.
You know what I'm saying?
And tell us like your journey, you know, like tell us about that.
Bro,
how did that go?
I get it. Like, I'm a white male in rap music. Like, I get it. Like, you know, I'm gonna get roasted from all different directions, but there's actually valuable information to be had in the conversation. So, you know, this is all I've really been trying to do is like, I'm not going to be the one that's like promoting myself. I got over that. I didn't find the rewards, but I do think that there's a conversation to be had. And like, yo, Asher, what were your experiences? Okay, here are my experiences. Like, how can we build off of that? So
it's a reality check. Yeah, ultimately.
For sure. Like,
and like, even for you, I mean, man, like, your first album was called Asleep in the Bread
Aisle. That's what I was going to say, though, when you asked me about the dough. Like, I had no idea how much money I was giving up. I was asleep in the bread aisle, bro, like 100%. Like, I did not realize what I was getting myself into. But, like, you know, Scooter, not for nothing, like, he knew. Like, if he did, like, a complex blueprint. And he knew, like, I need a white rapper, like a 13-year-old white R&B artist. Like, he knew how to, you know, gain leverage and popularity in with the market that he was talking to. I had no idea. I just, like, loved rap music. I loved rhyming words and wanted to like, you know, be part of a community. And so
straight up, I think from the start with you, like, that's always been the energy as well. You know, you look at the Roth Boys video. And like, all you're doing is joining the party, bro.
I appreciate like,
there's
that.
There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that, bro.
It's just tough. And like, you know, I feel pretty good about it. Cause in a world where everybody's getting canceled, I'm so far so good, bro. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they haven't come from my head. And like, I think respectfully so. Like, I went about my work honestly. You know, I went about what I was doing honestly. And I think like that allows me to keep going forward where some people, you know, you're out, man. You're out. Dodgeball, dog. You're out. You can't play anymore.
Straight up. So, do you have anything like immediately planned for the future?
You know, it's just kind of like this weird what's going on state right now. And so the immediate was just talking to you, you know, and just being like,
well, even like, okay, like after our conversation, like what are you going to do the rest of the day?
You know, really my attention has been towards this, outdoor music venue, like kind of this, it's a park in Philly called Sunflower Philly. And so for the past 3 years, there's been a lot of my attention has been with where I'm at in North Philadelphia and just like providing a space for people. And again, it was like one of those things that we were doing 3 years ago. And then when this pandemic hits, it's like, it's one of the few spaces that people can still go get a breath of fresh air. And so we have this stage that was built out of pallets, and it's like, it's meant to be artist development, a space for artist development. We've had Who Run It, which is a all women's curated painters event down there. We have kind of cannabis events. A lot of just conversations take place, and it's weird because it's just in this like Bermuda Triangle space in North Philly that's like not quite Fishtown, not quite Kensington, but like Temple's down the street. So there's room for growth there. So a lot of my attention is like making sure that that place is represented appropriately, that we're promoting musicians and graffiti artists has been the start, and also just local businesses that need a little bit of love. And, you know, again, just wanting to be a resource has been something for me, that just being in a place that you can actually help other people legitimately, not just like pass them a big check. You know what I mean? Like, here's a big check, we'll take a picture and I helped you. But truly empowering people with resources and tools that they may need to do what really matters. Yeah. So that's where I've been.
Yeah, becoming like part of the workforce, you know?
Absolutely, bro. Absolutely. And so the music stuff for me, it's like, you know, strangely, it's secondary at the moment, but it is like such an important part of the conversation and like the catalyst for interest. Like, I don't think people would care so much about Sunflower Philly if I was just some guy doing community work. But the fact that like objectively, like, oh, Asher Roth is working on this space in North Philadelphia, it makes it just a tad bit more interesting. And so, sure. Yeah, just using my powers and You know, I'm a half breed when it comes to magic and being a magician. So, you know, just trying to.
How do you mean? What do you mean?
Well, you know, my mom's a straight up and down witch. You know, so it's like, you know, I'm half muggle, half wizard. So it's just like,
I see you.
Yeah, being able to use those powers of making something out of nothing. alchemy is probably my favorite thing, man. But I use it with people, right? So it's like. If I know who, like, you're the way that you are, and I know that the way somebody else is and the way that somebody else is, I can put all those three people in the room knowing that something might come, like gold will be formed for that.
And it might be Rother.
You got it, bro. That's exactly it. And so that's what, like, I choose my producers in the same way. It's like, you know, Oren pretty much held down all of Asleep in the Bread Aisle. Blended Babies did pretty much all of Paps and Jazz and the Retro House recordings. And then Rob did all the Flowers on the Weekend. So I've always been that way with just kind of being like, let's not scatter this too much. But it just comes down to like, do you and I, you know, do we blend well? We might be different people, but we actually blend well together. So yeah, man, it's been fun. But a lot of my attention has been with the community here in Philadelphia and just making sure my friends and my family are all right. And then just making sure that I can continue to, it's just, you know, if you build it, they will come, man. It's like, nobody wants to like really support what we're up to independently. And it's not like a major label is knocking down my door to sign me. So it's just like, let's build our own, you know?
Hell yeah. Are there other artists officially associated with RetroHash as like a company?
No, not yet.
Or is it totally just your space for now?
Well, again, it's like, yeah, until like I really figure out, I don't want to be predatory, you know. I don't want to like sign somebody and be like,
I was just saying, like, I mean, what's scary about starting a space is like it becoming, you know, that kind of space.
Yeah.
And but at the same time, considering that it is a genuine opportunity to kind of like, I don't know, show people the world, you know, not just think that we're only here, you know, that we have a whole planet to explore.
Bruh.
But I do think that now is the time for like these community spaces to like be there more for their community than anyone else, you know, anybody else.
It's and like people like, you know, they talk about the issues with the cops, right? The cops are policing cities and neighborhoods that they don't even live in. Right. And so it's like similar to us being artists and musicians and like citizens of these neighborhoods. At the same respect, it's our responsibility to take care of them and make sure they're represented. So, like, from a political standpoint, it's right. Like, most of these people don't even know who their local representatives are. They might not even know who their senators are, you know, like, et cetera, et cetera. So it's like there's a certain responsibility that I feel, whether it's made up or not, that I feel just to make sure people are interested and involved. And so, like, that's what Sunflower Philly represents to me, is just making sure people are relatively interested in what's going on. And, yeah, like with RetroHash as a whole, musically, I just haven't figured out completely how to set that up without like, again, I don't want to sign anybody to a record label. That's not my, I'm more of like a council member, like an advisor of like, these kids still need guidance. These kids who are like 19 years old and just wicked with what they're going through and the music that they make, but have no idea how to get it out to the world. When we sit and we have a conversation, it helps them so much with their clarity, because again, a lot of these kids are going through it right now. I can't imagine being 17 with Snapchat, bro. Like what? Like, no, I'm good. I'm not going. But it's fun. But just being in a position of where I'm grounded and I'm coming from a place of integrity. It doesn't necessarily make all the money, but I do think I'm doing work that I'm happy with, that energizes me. There's just no like clear path for me right now, but
right.
Trying to figure it out in the publishing side of things to be able to like, where someone might trust what I'm doing to be able to help these other kids get their pub situations figured out. That would probably be step one of RetroHash.
That'd be sick.
Yeah.
That'd mean a lot to Philly.
I think so, man. I mean, that's the thing about coming back here, too. It's like, not to speak for Philadelphia, but there's not a lot of music business here, you know? Everybody dips, like, all the talent in the world, but, like, you pretty much have to go to L.A., if not New York. So just trying to get some sense of structure and music business here, even if it's just, again, like, kind of, like, incubator,
that allows you, like, you know, you ever play Sonic the Hedgehog?
Yeah.
You know how he's like grooving and he'll hit one of those like speed bursts and he gets to go a little bit faster. You know,
yes,
that's it, man. Just trying to be one of those little
speed.
Yeah, I'm trying to be a speed boost for some of the homies.
That's interesting. I'm glad you put it that way. I was thinking of it as a Pokemon gym. Yeah. But honestly, the speed boost I feel is more appropriate.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see how it all plays out, man. Again, I like to think that my intentions are good. I've battled with the greed and power goose, the ghouls and goblins, and like as strong as they are, I'm fortunate enough to have the early experience to just let these people know, like, hey, this is what to expect. And
sure,
the majority of the time, you're on your own, man. You're alone in this, and you got to have your own experiences. But it's super nice when you're hitchhiking somewhere, or if you're trying to get somewhere and you got a long way to go and you meet somebody down the line that can be like, yo, here's a little bit of water, and just to let you know, man, there's like a cliff over to the right, you might want to go left around 15 degrees, you know.
Yeah, facts.
So that's all, bro.
Damn. Yeah, I do love that throughout your work, to be a good neighbor really is
for real, bro. It's, yeah, it's so real. It's so real. And
I love that.
I know that sometimes it's like, oh, this is cheesy or whatever, like, yeah, it sounds good, but like, it's true, man. I mean, it's just stupid value, man. There's just so much value in, like, you know, the bar across the street, just by helping them out, doing trash club, taking care of certain things, like, around the way, like, I don't have to pay for beer. Like, there's just so much value in, true, you know what I mean? Like, there's just, yeah, little things.
Citizenship,
bro. And I know it's like, you know, might be sounding a little cliche, but it's just mad real, bro. Like, love thy neighbor. Like, take care of yourself. Take care of the world around you that you can see, like, what's right in front of us. I think that's what's wrong with the internet, is we get inundated with like people and things and places that aren't even part of our immediate world.
Yeah, we think we're a part of something that really we're not.
We're not. And all you need is like the internet to just get shut down, or like you see when some certain servers crash or whatever, that you realize that doesn't belong to you at all.
And for you to like claim it takes either a lot of work or a lot of, you know, transgressive behavior.
Yeah, man. And like, it's tough, man, because,
which is all good, you know, I mean, I think the world's changing as far as what that even means.
We'll see, man. What did you end up eating for breakfast?
What did I eat for breakfast? I had a chocolate croissant.
Nice, dude. Very French of you, man.
I did. Hey, man, I work at a pastry shop, so
I love it.
It's on site.
Are you a coffee drinker?
I am a coffee drinker. Only since I like left college, though. Like, I graduated school, and then I kind of found a bunch of different. I don't have like an office job, mm-hmm, you know, kind of thing. And like, I really had to find a bunch of different things to kind of cover my ass,
mm-hmm,
and like had to be awake all the time. You know, more so than I ever felt I had to in college, because just that kind of work felt pretty doable for me. But getting money is a whole other. It's a whole other object, you know, than getting good grades.
Man, what a trip, right?
Or like getting the knowledge you need, yeah.
Like the whole,
and
the getting money side of things, it's like I'm really becoming interested in just even just having some financial literacy and just really learning that, wow, money. And like, that's how everybody got super rich, was because they either had money that could make money, or, you know, their money's making money. But yeah, that was,
and then, so, and, wake up, and like, money is old, bro.
Oh,
old.
My gosh, bro. I mean, that's what I was saying in New York when I was like seeing like the old money, and Philly too, man. Philly has a lot of old money, and power structures are still in place. And so I get it. Like, I get like this kind of like freak out that, you know, the old guard is having, that these quote unquote progressives are coming through. But like, to me, again, you know, I guess, from a political standpoint, you can write it off for whatever it is. But to me, it just feels inevitable. Like, I remember, again, you're talking about grind. My father and I were laughing about it, because he was, well, not laughing about it, but just like the irony of like, well, when five people had 50% of all the wealth, nobody cared. And then when they had 75% of all the wealth, nobody cared. And now that they have like 99%, now suddenly, like, when was it enough anyway? You know, so. Yeah. But yeah, I just think it's all inevitable as far as just like scaling it back,
taking care of people. I know that people are freaked out by the word socialism, but it's really just like some social programs that like help people out. I'm not really into the, like, I get it, the whole you're out, dude, sorry, you just didn't make the ship in the war of the worlds. But I think that with all of the abundance that we have and a little bit switch up of ideology and kind of getting rid of this like fear-mongering religious world, I think our age group and the kids younger than us, like, we're pretty smart, we're engaged, we're connected. I do think good things are going to happen.
I think so too, because I think that a big part of the old guards freak out is like our realizing how much of the war is civil, you know,
100%.
And like
100%
created, you know, it's not really out of anyone's control.
Yeah, and now they got us arguing with bots. So once we're done arguing with bots, like, we'll probably get to the real work. But yeah, man, that's just what I'm about, is just like let's get some real work done. But I think in the meantime, we have to even know what we're talking about, and
100%.
We get to it by having conversations like this and help us refine what we're doing.
For sure. For sure. Hey, man, I'm excited. I'm definitely going to check out the spot in Philly.
Yeah,
next time I'm in town.
It's on sunflowerphilly.org too. And Instagram is at sunflowerphilly. And then, you know, obviously what I'm up to as well is just at Asher Roth. But bro, stay in touch. I mean, anything that you got going on. I mean, again, I know that with the podcasting stuff and Discord, maybe this might help with some of the recording and stuff. And even though we had to go through it, but you know, again, we kind of hang out in the same world. So just stay in touch.
Absolutely. Yeah. Asher Roth, big love.
Big love.
Thank you so much. Flowers on the Weekend, yo.
Yeah.
Everybody check that out. It's a very good record. Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
Good vibes. Yeah. We got one more coming up. Good vibes. One more video, Sharon Chernobyl.
Fun.
Featuring Logie, who is a Philadelphia artist. If people aren't familiar with Logie, check him out. He's a great listen, specifically if you're just kind of doing some work and want to hear. He's a brilliant kid. So he just put out a Lo and Behold around the same time Flowers on the Weekend came out, maybe in March. And he's a brilliant artist to support. So we're here, man. Stay in touch.
Anyone else you want to shout out before we go?
That's it for now. But yo, Robbie Deckhart for sure. I mean, like that kid's gonna be making music for a really long time. I'm fortunate to fall in with him.
How old is he?
I think he's probably gonna be 30 coming up.
Nice.
Yes.
Nice.
And then the best friends kids, CJ and Tay, they've been getting a lot of playlist love on Spotify recently.
Fire.
They have they do a good job of kind of marrying the indie world that they come from with kind of like this, like, you know, Tay and everything that he's gone through. He's very much into, I guess, what they're classifying as trap music. And so
gotcha.
They're having fun with that experiment of blending those two worlds. So, but yeah, man, I mean.
Yeah, I'll definitely be reaching out, man.
Yes.
Yeah, big love.
Stay in touch. Take care of yourself, brother.
All right. And yo, Slasher Goth.
You already know, bro.
I got it now. I got it. I didn't get it at first.
Slasher Goth, bro. That's also my gaming tag. So if you try and get it,
yeah, true enough.
I don't know if you want to play some Fall Guys or something, you know?
What do you want? Are you on the PlayStation?
I'm on PS4, Xbox? But my boys are pushing for me to switch it up when these new systems come out to get on the Xbox.
Hey, man. Halo, that new Halo game looks pretty
crazy. Hard. Shout out to George Kittle. He has a Halo tattoo and he just got his extension for the Niners. 5 years, 75 mil.
Big cash.
Big cash, bro. I should have played football.
Next life, man. Next life.
You already know. All right, bro.
All right. Peace out, G. Salute.
But I still got some love to give. Some love to give. Some love to give. But I still got some
love, baby. Tough to love lately. Trust among shady, debunk my feng shui. I'm up late, afraid, thinking about getting paid.